playback on RT Radio 1. Sponsored by the all-new Irish Times Weekend. With new writers like Marion Keyes and Sean Moncrief, your weekend's in good hands. Playback on RT Radio 1. Sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories and engrossing sports coverage.
Well, there was an amount of laughing on the radio this week. On Radio 1? On Lyric FM?
No.
Whichever direction.
On 2FM? On Radio Na Gaeltachta? On RTE Gold?
We got away with it. We got away with it.
And again, on Radio 1.
We just have to do that one thing.
Well, how? This laughter on Radio 1 came from the comedian Maeve Higgins, who was on with Marion Finucane.
I want to talk to you about Maeve.
You look
America.
So serious. I love being in the studio with you because I used to always listen to the show when I lived at home.
God
and I
bless
still
you.
Listen to the podcast sometimes. So it's just brilliant to be here and to see you with
well,
your
it's
glasses and your scarf.
You.
And you're just fantastic. Yeah.
Flattery will get you absolutely anywhere
yeah,
in
I didn't
studio.
Realize that I would feel starstruck except when I actually see you doing it in person. Normally, it's this kind of disembodied voice that's like telling me about it. But anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Being in awe of Marion, though, didn't stop Maeve disagreeing with her.
People that felt kind of cut off from success in the world resented Obama because he was black and he was bright and he was sophisticated and they didn't like it. Now, not all of them, but some of them did. Anyway, moving on.
I think supporting a racist person is quite racist. You're complicit in that, like. They chose him and look what he's doing now to black and brown people. The American media always kind of catch themselves out saying things like, oh, it's racially tinged or it's... I'm like, no, look, it's racist. Like, I know what I'm talking about.
Well, that's your opinion in that sense. But
it's backed up by research as
well. Sorry, but I don't accept that everybody who votes for them is a racist.
Maeve lives in the United States, which she loves.
I suppose I get to present podcasts with Mary Robinson, which I don't think would have happened. And I get to be in a movie and I get to meet like the most fascinating people that I've met, particularly through doing work with immigration, actually.
And she's also a regular on US radio.
Wait, don't tell me the show.
Oh, yeah, that's a great panel show that I do. And it has 5 million listeners. And it's like a news quiz. It's like the serious news, but we kind of make fun of it.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. Here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks, everybody. Thank you all.
That show, Wait, Don't Tell Me, is actually broadcast on RTE Radio 1 Extra, the digital channel, on Sunday evenings and Monday mornings. This week, the panel were talking about President Trump and the Mueller report.
Here is your first quote.
No collusion. No obstruction. Complete and total exoneration.
That was the president celebrating something that literally said, quote, it does not exonerate the president. What was it?
It's the Mueller report.
The Mueller report! Oh.
The Wait, Don't Tell Me quiz from RTE Radio and Extra on Monday morning at 8:30. Over on Radio 1 a little later, Ryan Tubridy had a guy named Dennis Canty in studio. Actually, Ryan bookended the week with two men talking about technology, one who embraces it and one who rejects it. Dennis was the one who embraced it.
I actually have two implants in either hand, between the index finger and the thumb. There are two different technologies. The one in my right hand, that's like in access cards. So going to buildings, for example, at my workplace, I can actually scan into the building using my hand.
Right, so I have a card that gets me in here through all the doors.
So I don't have one anymore.
Your hand does that and the door opens.
Yeah, so that's the right hand, I would say, Ryan. And the left hand is a different form of technology that's very similar to the contactless payment systems that you have, that you use.
The tapping.
The tapping. Now, at the moment, the payment protocols aren't opened, so I can't actually use my hand for payment right now. Although there are some people in Sweden that are actually doing that. What I actually use it for is medical information. So I store medical information on my left hand and that could be scanned with any iPhone or Samsung phone. So if something happened to me and I went into a hospital, on my screensaver of my phone, I have a message and that will inform the nurse or doctor that they can scan my hand and get all my medical information.
Dennis Canty from Ryan Tubridy's show on Monday. And later in the week, Ryan met Mark Boyle, the complete opposite to Dennis in that he has tried to live without modern technology.
I don't have any electricity at all.
I don't have any internet, don't have any mobile phone, don't have a washing machine. None of the things that we take for granted.
No fridge.
No fridge.
No running water.
No running water.
No flushing toilet.
No flushing toilet.
No washing machine.
No washing machine.
No phone.
No phone.
No watch.
No watch, no clock.
No tin foods.
No tin foods. It's a lot of stuff.
What's left?
Well, what is left? It's a good question. I think life is left. We kind of forget sometimes that when we accept one thing, we reject another thing. I think when we bring in all of these technologies into our lives, we're rejecting a lot of life.
Mark Boyle with Ryan Tuberty on Thursday. Back to Monday and back to laughter on Radio na Gaeltachta. The programme Tú Sáidte was celebrating 50 years of broadcasting by Sean Bon Brannock. It was presented by Michelle Negrina.
Did you remember you had skill in the ash character?
Now, for most people, Sean Bon is known as the sports commentator, especially for his commentary on Katie Taylor's Olympic win. 10.9. But earlier in Sean Bond's career, he was a music presenter, and often his choice of records were frowned upon.
Lulu had a boyfriend, his name was Tommy Tucker. On the Hodella and Shin, Shinkernian hug my hand a while as Sasna.
Sean Bond recalled how one of his scoops was to get to interview the Hothouse Flowers when they first appeared on the main music show of the time, the BBC's Top of the Pops.
You need accreditation about a month ago. So, but my grandmother, my granny, she's 92, she's from Roscommon. And do you know what she loves? Poutine. Del Mahan, you have the right man. Why is that a good thing? Well, if you let me in, if I go over the machine, you let me in, I'll bring you two bottles of poutine. I don't believe it.
Sean Bon Brannock on Radio na Gaeltachta on Monday, celebrating 50 years of broadcasting. Still on Monday, and there were no laughs on the programme that's supposed to cheer you up at the start of the day, 2FM's Breakfast Republic.
Absolutely. Not an April Fool.
They have a quiz called Smarty Pants, which on Monday was stand out for all the wrong reasons. The programme actually put it up on their Instagram account, and when you look at it, you wonder why.
Smarty pants, eh?
Do you think this?
The idea behind the Smarty Pants quiz is that a member of the public come on and they compete with one of the show's presenters. In this case, it was listener Sarah versus Lottie Ryan. The other presenter, Keith Walsh, was putting the questions.
Sarah, how are you this morning?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm excellent, thank you. Have you had any April Fool's pranks pulled on you yet?
No, I'm not really into that kind of thing.
No, me neither, and I hate people who do it to you.
Well, I mean, each to their own.
Is your name really Sarah, though?
Sarah, yeah.
Oh, just checking. And what do you do, sir?
I'm an accountant.
Oh, very good. Is that why you're not really into April Fools? Because you're an accountant, you're very straight, serious.
I don't really get what you mean by that, but maybe.
No, but accountants have this reputation of being very serious and very straight, and you mightn't be into like having the crack with April Fools. You know what I mean?
No, I like having the crack, Keith.
Okay, no, just checking. I think. That's good. It's good. It's good that we know. And what did you do at the weekend then? Prove that you like having the crack. What did you do this weekend?
Well, actually, my boyfriend kind of broke up with me at the weekend, so it wasn't really that great.
That is a bad weekend, sir.
It's not great now, to be fair.
Not a great weekend at all. No. Now I feel terrible, Sarah.
those technical gremlins, I'm telling you.
Is that what it is?
It is. Optimistic as well for the day that's in it.
At the same time on Lyric FM, AA Road Watch woman Sarah Nolan was in Kinks with Marty Whelan talking about April Fool's jokes.
I've just seen a mechanical cow that gives milk. It's all coming our way now.
There we go.
Do they think we're completely stupid?
Wouldn't that be the dream, though? Oh, that'd be class.
I don't know. What'll happen to the cow's milk then?
Oh,
we have to get some other way of getting...
And Marty's listeners, of course, had their own one-liners.
Now, Cathy Tracy's been on from Kiltipper in Dublin. Did you know, she says, that Anne Boleyn had a brother? His name was Tenpin. Tenpin Boleyn.
What island would you find the active shield volcano Kilauea?
Hawaii.
Back on the 2FM Smarty Pants quiz, things are going down the toilet.
That's correct.
No!
Which means...
I don't know how that's correct, though. Like, did you show her the answer? Because you didn't even know how to pronounce it properly.
Sarah, no, she, like, it was totally...
He absolutely didn't show me, Sarah. We're on Facebook Live, so people would have seen if he showed me. We have to play fair and square.
I got it right in the end.
I wish he would play fair and square, because I actually don't think he did. Sarah, look... You don't need to be so mean about when you get a question right either.
Sarah, I understand. Look, you're going through... it's a tough day for you. It was a tough weekend.
Now, hang on a sec, Sarah. There's no need. Like, there's actually no need. I won, so...
I don't know. It's debatable. Thanks a million.
All right. Sorry, Sarah. Thanks for coming on.
Okay, bye, Sarah.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Poor old Sarah. I think you should let her win, Lolly. I think you're very hard on her.
But the whole point of Smarty Pants is to play fair and square.
I know, but like...
Listen, she's obviously had a bad weekend. And I'm terribly sorry that she's...
Ooh. And it's just trying to see if we can pinpoint...
Back to Lyric FM. And thank goodness for Marty Whelan's gagtastic listeners to help lift the mood.
Paul Egan has been on from Roscommon. Good man, Paul. He says he's been kicked out of the Peripheral Vision Club. As he says himself, he didn't see that coming.
Back on 2FM on Monday morning and Breakfast Republic, and the agony is not over for Keith and Lottie. After a break, it appears Sarah, the quiz contestant, is not finished with them. She's back on the line.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Sarah. Are we still friends?
Emma from your station called me. She rang me back just because obviously I was really mean because April Fool's, guys! It's hey.
Who are you?
Laura Fox,
they're
working
to a funky.
No!
No, sorry. Sorry, I know.
Laura, I actually, when we came off air there, I threw my headphones off and I go, Keith, like, come on. And he went to me. I thought, are you not? Did you do that? And then Ethna, the producer, came in and said, listen, we didn't know what was going on.
Well, actually, I have to say, Sarah, I thought it was set up by Lottie because... You were being quite, like, you were getting thick with her.
Well, because
I barely clocked her, Keith, though. And that's why I had to turn it back around on Lottie, because the minute you went, sure, who would be ringing in a radio station if they just got dumped at the weekend? And I was like, crap. And I was like, Lottie, why are you being so mean to me?
From Breakfast Republic on 2FM on Monday morning. And back again to Lyric FM, where Marty Whelan's listeners are still cranking them out.
Here's one for you now this morning from Tom Andromeda. Good man, Tom. And he says, two economists were sitting... Two economists sitting at a nudist colony. One said, have you read Marx? The other says...
You know the drill by now. After the break.
Playback on RTÉ Radio 1. Sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories and engrossing sports coverage.
Two economists were sitting at a nudist colony. One said, have you read Marx? The other says, it's the wicker chairs.
From Marty in the Morning on Lyric FM, that joke was tagged by Henrietta Broderick, who wrote to playback at rte.ie. She also recommended a daft song from Saturday afternoon on Aideen Gormley's Music and Musicals on Lyric FM.
At school in Glasgow in the 60s, I started singing with my pal Andy's Scottish dance band. After a few years, Andy moved to London, where he had great success. We Andy's Scottish songs have always stayed with me. You may know We Andy today as Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber. And I would like to sing for you now a tribute to my pal from school, We Andy Webber's Scottish Medley.
How midnight, not the sound men. As the moon lost her memory, she's smiling alone. In the lamplight, the weather leaves collected my feet, and the wind begins to moan. Oh, Jesus Christ, superstar.
Comedian Dean Park from Music and Musicals on Saturday afternoon on Lyric FM. More music, this time from Ghana.
When the fisherman is ready to go to sea, he sings. When they come back and they're drawing their nets, they sing.
From BBC Africa on RTE Radio 1 Extra, they featured a report on palm wine music, a style originally from the 1920s, which is being revived. The reporter here is Sule Lansa from BBC Africa.
And what these groups are doing is sometimes they take very popular modern day hip life songs and they superimpose them on palm wine rhythms to get the young people to appreciate this kind of music.
From a programme called The Fifth Floor on RTE Radio 1 Extra. And Radio 1 Extra this week featured a style of interviewing you're not going to get nowadays.
Please, Arthur, tell me how it started with you.
How it started? Well, that's difficult. It started when I was born.
It was a piece from the RTE Radio Archives from 1968.
Have an Irish cigarette and think.
Yeah. I started the right place when I was...
Radio Éireann producer Petronella O'Flanagan spoke to American playwright Arthur Miller.
As you know, we have book censorship. We have film censorship. But one of your plays has gone on.
Arthur Miller is best known for writing plays such as Death of a Salesman, but better known for marrying Marilyn Monroe.
And nobody can kind of really understand it. Is it autobiographical or what? They're all kind of going back to the autobiographical thing in it.
It is pleasant for people to gossip always when they write about whoever it may be, whether it's Hemingway or Goethe or Joe Blow. Mm. People now, especially now, are less interested in the work that he does than in himself.
Well,
and a lot of us, unfortunately. And given the publicity apparatus that exists today, find it difficult to escape that.
From a 1968 interview in the RTE Radio Archives with playwright Arthur Miller and Petronella O'Flanagan plying him with Irish cigarettes. I'll put a link to the full interview on the Playback webpage. That notion of difficult fame Arthur Miller referred to was also mentioned in Miriam McCallaghan's programme on Sunday morning. In studio, she had a man named Fiacra Trench.
You're credited and known for the string arrangements on the Boomtown Rats, I Don't Like Mondays and Fairy Tale of New York by the Pogues. You've also worked with Van the Man, Elvis Costello, Art Garfunkel, Sinead O'Connor, The Corrs. I could go on and on and on. And did you teach Paul McCartney's wife Linda to play the piano?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah, it's funny you were talking about the price of fame. And I remember being there one day and Linda was on the phone to the McCartney office down in Soho Square and she said, oh yes, and some envelopes and some notepaper, please. I thought, bless her, she cannot walk out of our house and down the street to the local shop to buy those things. That's the toxic price of, you know, celebrity.
I don't need a reason. Fiacra was in studio with singer Flo McSweeney. He's worked on her latest album.
I've got these excuses. They're tired and lame. I don't need a pardon, no. There's no one left to blame. I'm leaving the table. The table. I'm out of the game.
Flo McSweeney on Sunday with Miriam. She quoted Maya Angelou in her conversation with Miriam.
There is nothing more tragic than the burden of an untold story. And I felt if I don't do an album and tell my story, it would be a horrible regret.
As if to illustrate that, Master storyteller, writer Dermot Bulger was in studio. He has a new book out. It's based on a woman who fought regret.
I met Sheila Fitzgerald and she was 73, I was 18. They seemed impossibly old. And she lived in a small caravan and she didn't leave behind a great body of work, but she left behind an inspiration. She inspired Paul Dawkins, she inspired Pauline Buick, she inspired all kinds of people. She suffered great tragedies, and this is Mother's Day, and she'd lost her son, she'd lost her daughter, she'd lost her granddaughter. And the novel is about what it's like to have a son who's gay in the 1950s and 60s. But it's really about a woman at a time of life when most people settle for a sour sort of compromise, at the age of almost 50, who left her husband and spent the next 50 years living an independent life in Tangiers and all kinds of, and it's quite, you know, it was determined no matter what happened to embrace happiness. And so she was, I had a great teenage year meeting this extraordinary woman in the field, and so I've spent the last 40 years trying to tell her story and live with her, and so An Arc of Life is my attempt to actually finish her story.
Dermot Bulger with Miriam O'Callaghan on Sunday Morning on Radio 1. And back to the laughter. This time it was Rachel English and Gavin Jennings on Morning Ireland at the end of It Says in the Papers.
A dog is pictured on the front pages of The Mail and The Independent. He's a small terrier, and in The Independent's photo he's been minded by Sarah Ryan of Irish Rail after he was found alone on a train arriving at Houston Station in Dublin from Salons at rush hour yesterday. A spokesman, Barry Kenny, told The Independent that the black and brown coloured terrier, christened Hamish by his temporary custodians, completely ignored the feet are not for seats sign as he hopped up on one after boarding. And he entertained a lot of people on the train. He's an adorable pup, according to the Mail headline, though the paper does call him a fur dodger.
John, thank you.
I think the entire country wants to adopt him as well. We'll have to check up on his progress this morning.
And I hazard that Hamish has a better understanding of Brexit than most of us do. That's what we're going to be talking about next.
Actually, the breakfast show on RTE Gold had some good Brexit news. Will Leahy was talking with Niamh McManus, who was reviewing the papers.
There's a friend of mine, her husband is Scottish, and they're going away over Easter, and he's really worried that if Brexit Day is the 12th of April, he'll have problems with his passport and his driver's licence and all that. And this is a genuine concern amongst many British people, that if they are abroad and Brexit Day happens, so nobody has booked holidays abroad for Easter, because if Brexit Day does happen to be the 12th of April, so they're steering clear of the usual UK hotspots like Spain and Portugal. So apparently there's great bargains to be had. For we Europeans, or we EU Europeans.
From Gold Breakfast with Will Leahy on RTE Gold. Tommy Gorman, RTE's Northern Editor, wrote on the RTE News site this week that Brexit was addictive. Like he wrote, peeping out through the net curtains at the neighbours rowing in the back garden. The problem with this, of course, is it distracts you from what's going on in your own home. Like, for example, the Quinn case in the High Court. It seemed to be one of those complex cases that only legal finance nerds would be interested in.
Sean Quinn, as probably everybody in the country knows by now, gambled hundreds of millions of euro on the price of Anglo-Irish Bank shares, particularly using financial instruments called contracts for difference. Now, Anglo ended up lending him more than 2 billion euro, partly to fund massive losses he incurred when the share price collapsed. His children denied liability for around 415 million euro in total, arising from guarantees they signed in relation.
The Quinn versus IBRC case ended on Wednesday.
We heard that as part of the settlement, judgment is to be entered against each of the five Quinn children, Kira, Colette, Brenda, Aoife and Sean Quinn Jr., in the sum of just over 88 million euro each, or a total of 440 million euro.
Orlo O'Donnell, the legal affairs correspondent from the News at One, and Brian Carey of the Sunday Times put it in historical context.
It's a major milestone, not only in the liquidation of the Quinn Group, but also in the potential wind-up of IBRC, and I suppose in many ways drawing a line under the whole economic collapse, the whole financial crisis that engulfed the country 10 years ago and the remnants of which we are still living through.
But it was only the following mornings, It Says in the Papers, that hammered it home, that obscure group IBRC that was up against the Quinns, that was actually us.
The state's battle with the Quinn family has cost the public up to 170 million euro in legal and other fees, missing rental incomes and other money that has gone astray.
Astray. John S. Doyle and It Says in the Papers on Wednesday. They would have been able to put that 170 million to good use in University Hospital Limerick. It made an overcrowding record on Wednesday.
INMO says today that 81 people are waiting for a hospital bed in university hospitals.
That news was followed by two frustrating interviews on the News at One.
It's extremely difficult in there for patients.
Mary Fogarty of the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation said this.
All of the inpatient wards have an additional three trolleys lining the corridors. Fire escapes are blocked and there are hazards there for staff.
And then Professor Paul Burke of the UL Hospital Group said this.
Right now, at 1 o'clock today, there are 16 patients on trolleys on the wards. There are 15 wards, so there is one trolley on each ward as we speak at the moment. Now, over the next hour, more patients will go up to the wards because right now there are 40 patients in ED waiting for beds. And now, over the next number of hours, another probably 12 patients will go to the wards. But over the course of the day, we will admit and discharge approximately 50 patients to 60 patients every day. There's a turnover in this hospital of about 60 patients every day.
So despite the fact that we're hearing today that at your hospital, University Hospital Limerick, we have the highest figure recorded for patients on trolleys in the state since the INMO's trolley watch records began, are you saying this is not a crisis?
No, it's not a crisis. It's something we deal with all the time.
Let's talk directly to someone who's just been discharged from UHL in Limerick, Denise Crewe. Denise, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
From what you saw over the last few days, is there a crisis in the university?
Oh, there is. It's terrible, it is. There was an elderly lady in the room with me, and I actually had to, when she rang the bell, nobody came for about maybe 10 minutes, that I'd actually have to go up and ask them to come down because she needed to go to the bathroom.
From Liveline on Wednesday, and before that, the News at One on the same day. For the rest of that Liveline programme, and for much of the other Liveline programmes this week, they were talking about hospital care, specifically stories from women telling about their birth experiences.
So I had a doctor at the end of my bed with his foot up on the bed trying to pull my baby out of me. The doctor kept saying, I can't get it out, I can't get it out.
The registrar came in around 9:30. And he went through everything with me, Joe, but he was falling asleep when he was talking to me.
So I rang the bell and I was greeted with this midwife who was anything but friendly. I was annoying or this kind of thing, you know. So she kept saying to me, you're not in labour. Pure, like, I'm not listening to it. And I was pleading with her.
This baby is down on my bladder. It's up in my chest. His reaction was, oh, all you expectant women and your vanity.
Luckily, another midwife walked into the room to get something. And she looked at me and she saw the state I was in and she examined me. She said, oh, Roisin, you're 9.5 centimetres.
And he sat on my bed, Joe, with his back turned to me, addressing my husband at the end of the bed. And he explained that I hadn't really pushed hard enough due to the diabetes and that I wasn't able to help with the delivery.
It was your fault.
It was my fault.
So she went away and I was left with, I know it's very graphic, but the placenta between my legs. Yeah. I was in a nightdress. The first midwife came in then at that stage and I was in pure shock. And she said, well, look at you there now. You were telling the truth. You had the baby after.
From Liveline. Part of John Rutter's P.A. Jesu from Classical Daytime and Lyric FM on Monday. As you know, we have an email address for your suggestions. It's playback@rte.ie. And Moira Ann Doyle wrote this week to suggest a piece from Sunday Miscellany by Susan Weir. It was called The Pram.
Their bodies were metal, usually steel,
and they sat on springs above a gleaming chrome chassis.
Susan recalled a time when little girls would go around their neighbourhoods asking to take babies out for a walk.
The baby would be secured in the pram with a leather harness decorated with teddy bears. A soother was placed next to the frilly pram pillow, and a bottle was put, for emergencies, out of the baby's reach at the handle end. A blanket was tucked around the baby, and the pram's apron was draped over everything and fastened on each side. Lastly, a string of plastic rattles was stretched across the front of the hood, and all was ready. On cold days, the hood remained in the fully upright position, but on warmer days, you could lower it by lifting the metal levers on either side. The mother wheeled the pram out of the front door, bounced it down one or two steps, and we were off. As I pushed the big sprung pram down the street, I would pass other prams parked in front gardens, some with fringed white sun canopies, jiggling with the movements of the babies underneath. When I reached the local shop, I would apply the brake on my pram and carefully park it outside, then retrieve the shopping list in which the money was wrapped from under the apron. And yes, the baby was abandoned outside the shop while I went inside.
Susan Weir from Sunday Miscellany. It's just after 9 on Sunday mornings on Radio 1. And reminiscences too this week in the book on 1. It was Minor Monuments, and it was read by the author Ian Maleny.
60 years ago, as a young man, he had gone to a dance in some parish hall near Tullamore. There he watched a small young woman playing an accordion that was almost too big for her to hold. Owen didn't speak to her on the night, and he had never seen her again. But he was sure the very same woman was now sitting in front of him in the nursing home. He told her that he recognized her and remembered that night in the hall, and she began to weep. It was all so long ago.
Ian Maleny from The Book on One, weeknights on Radio 1 at 20 past 11. Another writer, Emer McBride, appeared on the drama on One, reading her own work in a drama called Mouthpieces.
If she could not see around the corner, if there was no corner to see around, if the corner, or not, was the end of it all. But if the corner was the be-all and end-all of it all, of everything. If there was no everything, only this thing, and that was all things. If she thought like that, if she thought that, if there was no getting to, if there was only is. If is the thing she liked to think, except there is no like, and there is no think, there is only is. There is no only, there is. Is all there is?
Emer McBride and the drama on One, Mouthpieces. The full performance is available to hear on the Drama on One page on rte.ie. The most dramatic sound this week may have been this. From Seascapes, and a report by presenter Fergal Keane on the Norwegian cruise ship that lost power in rough seas last week.
That's the sound of the general alarm sounding on the Viking Sky cruise vessel off Norway last weekend. With 1,300 passengers on board, they suffered complete engine failure in a storm. These people were among 479 airlifted off by helicopter.
And you saw a wave. We were on the second floor of the ship, and we saw a wave coming that was actually higher than where we were sitting. So I can't tell you how big that wave was exactly, but I do know I could not see the top of it from the second floor of the ship. And when that wave hit the ship, the window broke, water started flooding in. People were screaming, tables were flying, people were flying. we were just basically terrified.
We could see that we were getting blown in towards some rocks. That was the most frightening thing, I think. But luckily that wasn't our destiny.
The crew, I can't even begin to tell you, we're sitting there in the middle of this disaster and they're coming through with water, food, towels, trying to care for us.
The guy came down from the helicopter, one of the Coast Guards, snapped my belt and said, hold it, and shot me up about 100 feet in the air and onto the helicopter. But they were awesome. I mean, as soon as they hoisted you up, he grabbed me and pulled me in like a sack of potatoes and dragged me to the back of the helicopter.
Some adventure. Moncon McGann was talking Adventurous 2 and Offbeat Holidays with Sean O'Rourke, including one which sounds truly bizarre and upsetting.
This used to be like one of the highlights of La Paz, of visiting La Paz. There would be 5,000 people a year going into the San Pedro prison tour. It's been made illegal since, but you can actually still do it. If you turn up at the gates and you slip the guards some money, depending on their mood, you can get away with slipping them about 20 euros. You get inside the prison walls. Now, if you're doing this, tell your embassy or tell someone at home, okay? Because there are no prison guards within the prison. The prison guards are outside, and after that, it's a free-for-all. So it's a really intriguing glimpse into a micro community. The prisoners there need to buy or rent their own cells. So you can buy one for $15,000. And for that, you get your own bathroom, you get your own kitchen, and you see the different sort of levels of people living. If you're dirt poor as a prisoner, you're all clamped together in one cell. But there's a whole economy. Like, they have these football championships, and there's each week, $50,000 worth of bets are put on either side. Like, Coca-Cola sponsors some of the team on the understanding that only Coca-Cola vending machines will be within the prison. It's mind-opening.
It's extraordinary. And you say you should tell somebody if you're going in, maybe your embassy or somebody at home, because what, you mightn't get back out again?
I mean, just I suppose when you're travelling, I guarantee it's absolutely safe.
I was just going to say, they probably are not very nice people in there.
No, they're the worst ever. But the reason why you as a tourist will be safe is because the guards get a kickback and the prisoners. So it's in their interest to look after you.
Moncon McGann with Sean O'Rourke on Monday. On Tuesday, on the same show, Prisoners Again, this time with Brian O'Connell, focusing on how they fare after life in prison. He spoke to Wayne.
I got out from Mountjoy after a 5-year sentence, and I was walking down North Circular Road, and I got to the traffic lights at the Big Tree, and I'll never forget it. The sun was rising. Crow Park was getting built at the time, is how I remember it. They were doing the new stadium, and they'd started demolishing it. I couldn't cross the road. The traffic seemed so fast, but the cars looked strange. Cars changed, you know what I mean? They'd gone from this kind of box type to this, you know, slimline, something like you'd see on the telly in space age, you know? It was strange.
From Sean O'Rourke on Tuesday. The previous evening on Arena, there was that sense of gradual change being almost unnoticeable unless, in this case, you go back and look at recent photos. Producer Olin McGowan was looking at a photo from a music event. It was in the course of a conversation with Sheena Barrett at an exhibition which looks at popular music and visual art.
So what we're looking at here is a photographic print of an image taken by Anne-Marie Barry in 2003 at a beach party, a rave. One of the things that's most striking for me about this image is that nobody in the photo has a mobile phone on them. I think so many images that we see now, if anyone is at a gig, you can see a whole stream of people holding up their phones to record the event. When you think about how we saw, for example, the Fire documentary recently that was talking about this big beach party effectively, all of that was mediated through mobile phone. And the initial sort of glossy images that you would expect to find on Instagram documenting an event, a kind of live feed of what's happening, none of that existed. So it's actually really unusual to have photographs from this time of these events because so few people brought cameras with them.
Sheena Barrett at the Lab Gallery in Dublin from Arena, the arts programme on Monday night. Just after Arena on Monday night, Declan McCarthy wrote to Playback at RTE.ie to suggest listening back to a piece John Creedon did. During his music show, John paused the music to look around the studio and into the offices beyond. He was reacting to the news that day that the RTE Cork sports journalist Pat McAuliffe had died suddenly.
This old building can be lonely at times, but I'm looking out there the side window at Pat's desk, and next week's assignments are there and all the memorabilia that he loves so much. There's the picture of Sonia O'Sullivan and himself at the Cork Person of the Year Awards. And there's Pat with the Sam Maguire. I can see it all from here. And there's a lifetime of laminates, because he was like that, like the boy that I think resides in most men if they can find it. He loved his heroes. He loved his match programmes. And they're all there, all the car passes and the laminates and everything else. And so quite often he'd pop in here when I'm in the middle of the programme. And, you know, during those brief encounters, or at the end of those brief encounters in between the records here at night, we would always part with the promise that we had to catch up one of the nights and reminisce on the pirate days and all the old sporting legends from our childhood. Growing up in Cork. And it's with a heavy heart this evening that I see that opportunity has just slipped away from us. A yeshde gurev anam.
John then played John Spillane's all the ways you wander.
Where the sun is always shining, the oranges grow on the trees. You only have to wait 2 seconds there for everything you please. In a garden of daisies, in a circle of light, searching for the wind of your heart's delight. I'll wait for you, a true friend. I'll
have a very happy birthday. And Mary in Temple Oak asking for this song. She couldn't believe the amount of people who were stopping and photographing the beautiful cherry blossoms over the weekend.
Tell you about the cherry trees. Every April in our town, they put on the most outrageous clothes, and they sing and they dance around. Hardly anybody sings or dances. Hardly anybody dances or sings in this town that I call my own.
John Spillan and Ronan Collins on Tuesday. And John will be making another appearance next week, courtesy of RTE Radio, but not on air. He'll be performing at a documentary radio conference in Cork, being hosted by RTE and being organised by Documentary on One. There'll be several hundred radio documentary makers coming from as far afield as Nepal, Australia and Malawi. The theme is stories and how we tell them. So RTE Radio 1 Folk Awards have arranged for John Spillan to demonstrate how we tell stories in song.
Travelled all around the sun, it's taken us one whole year. Well done, everyone. Well done. On behalf of me and the cherry trees, well.
And of course, one of our favourite storytellers on radio is Olivia O'Leary. In her weekly column on Drive Time, she's often musing and funny, but this week she was cross.
We see rules as gloriously flexible, depending on the season, whether it's your birthday, whether you'll get away with it, and whether you're on your way to Mass.
Her concern was the criticism of the Gardaí for breathalysing people in the daytime.
Yeah, there are a number of politicians in the Dáil, even in the cabinet, who seem to think that drink driving is OK if you're on your way to Mass. Minister Finian McGrath and others have raised as a scandal the thought that Gardaí might breathalyse Massgoers. Now, there's obviously some moot theological point being made here, something which echoes the old Roman Catholic penny catechism requirement for the categorisation of a mortal sin. A mortaler, for those who can remember such things, required grave matter, full knowledge and complete consent. Is there something in the Roman Catholic-trained Irish conscience which believes that even though someone's Saturday night drinking leaves him too drunk to drive a car safely to Mass on Sunday, that somehow his intention of going to Mass makes the matter less grave and dilutes the consent? If he kills a small child on the way to Mass, would it be a crime, but because he'd meant to be good and God-fearing, not a sin?
Olivia O'Leary on Drive Time on Wednesday with her weekly column. Olivia also has a weekly programme, the poetry programme, on Sunday nights on Radio 1 at 7:30. This week's programme featured poet Paul Muldoon reading one of his poems that Olivia said was a favourite.
The Sightseers. My father and mother, my brother and sister and I, with Uncle Pat, our dour, best-loved uncle, had set out that Sunday afternoon in July in his broken-down Ford, not to visit some graveyard. One died of shingles, one of fever, another's knees turned to jelly. But the brand-new roundabout at Ballygawley, the first in Mid-Ulster. Uncle Pat was telling us how the B specials had stopped him one night somewhere near Ballygawley and smashed his bicycle and made him sing the sash and curse the Pope of Rome. They held a pistol so hard against his forehead there was still the mark of an O when he got home.
Paul Muldoon reading Sightseers from the poetry programme on Radio 1, Sunday night at 7:30.
Playback on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories and engrossing sports coverage.
Welcome back. The world, as you know, is broken into two types of people. Those who talk about Game of Thrones and those who have a life. There's something going on with Game of Thrones this week because it kept being mentioned on the radio.
And a New York City location of Shake Shack has debuted two Game of Thrones themed fast food items. But only those who speak High Valyrian will be able to order.
Ryan Tuberty.
It's been some 8,000 years since the Long Night, but the Night King and his army broke down the wall.
Arena had a script about it on Wednesday night, and tonight they have a special about the series.
And they're on their way back to Westeros. And it's fairly safe to say that they're not coming in peace this time around.
And bad enough for the arts show to allow Game of Thrones through the door, but even a serious current affairs head like Sean O'Rourke gave it airspace. Sean had A.B. Philbin Bowman in to talk about Game of Thrones, but A.B. detected Sean was indifferent.
I actually asked the fans if they would help me to convince you. So here's a little listen to some of them having a go at doing that.
If you were talking to an Irish radio presenter, hypothetically called Sean, who's never seen Game of Thrones, in his very late 40s, but he loves politics and history, how would you convince him he should watch it?
It's all about politics.
Yeah, it's all about that.
And politics and strategy.
Think of it as politics, but much more entertaining.
I think you're missing out. Mate. I think, yeah, we shouldn't have to persuade you. You should just do it.
Well, I'd say, Sean, make sure you have enough time on your calendar, because once you start watching, you're never going to let go again. You're going to be sucked straight in.
I think I better retire early.
A.B. Philbin Bowman with Sean O'Rourke on Thursday. And back to Brexit. This week, as you know, Taoiseach Leo Varadkar met with European leaders to discuss the impact on Ireland of the various Brexit possibilities.
So I'm delighted to be here in Paris and very grateful.
On Tuesday, he was in Paris meeting French President Emmanuel Macron. Leo was presumably glad to get away from all that chat about the letter to Kylie Minogue.
Your support is appreciated.
Oui, mon cher.
Exactly. Come on, Cher, indeed.
No.
Although she's not actually coming till November.
No, Leo, I said shit.
Cher at the Three Arena. It's going to be tricky enough to reach out to her as well now, what with the media FOIing the crap out of my personal letters.
Anyway, this is a time for difficult decisions.
Tell me about it. The Spice Girls are in Croker in May. Oh. Should I write just one note or four separate ones?
Oh, mon Dieu.
Tough decisions.
From Callan's Kicks Friday afternoon podcast.
Now, you know, we're all on our best behaviour today. Everybody on best behaviour. Yes, we are, because Angela Merkel's coming to Dublin.
I'm back to RTÉ Gold and still more Brexit.
What do we serve her? Because of German food.
And Will Leahy and Niamh McManus on Gold Breakfast were preoccupied with what to give her to eat.
Yeah, so I don't know if Pascal Donohue's going to whip out the giant sausage for Angela Merkel and go, look, this is what I've made for you. Yes, do you think somewhere in the bowels of Leinster House, somebody's sitting there going, what can we give to the German Chancellor?
I don't know, but my money is always on a nice scone.
Yeah.
I just don't think you can go wrong.
I don't know what time of the day she's coming at. Is she coming for lunch? Nice.
A scone. What a great idea. Niamh McManus, previously from RTÉ Gold and now with the Department of Foreign Affairs. That's it for this week. Back again next weekend with the longer playback podcast at 4:30 on Friday afternoon and the broadcast on Saturday morning on Radio 1 at 9:10. In the meantime, if you hear something you really liked on RTÉ's audio services that you think we should share, let us know by email to playback@rte.ie. Slán.
Playback on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories and engrossing sports coverage.